Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then in another clash of undefeated teams, Earl Clark and Coach Steven Jackson lead the DMV Trilogy against Montrezl Harrell, Coach Dr. J, and the Chicago Triplets. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays Monday on BET. Presented by iHeart. Yay, yay.
If Ohio State is now available at a discount, it could be the perfect time to buy the Buckeyes. Welcome to The Beat, presented by the Waterworks. It is the Austin Berm Show. He is Berm. I am Austin. And it is Wednesday. What do we do on Wednesday, Berm?
Well, generally, we stand in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and we talk about the happenings around us. However, the football season is coming to a conclusion and we are not standing in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. You are at your home. I am at my home. Today, we are going to talk about stocks. We are going to talk about people who we think Ohio State football can rely on and who those of which we believe they cannot any longer.
That was a great
memory. I was doing my best Fernando Mendoza impression.
Oh, yeah, well done. You were either a robot or you memorized something for a school book report. Either way, well done. So we're not going to be high or low, but we are going to be buying or selling this week. It's not even really going to be as much about individuals, although in some cases, I guess it will be. But there have been a number of hot button topics, Berm, coming out of the loss to Indiana on Saturday night, heading into the Cotton Bowl, this busy month of December ahead for Ohio State. By the way, the number two seeded Buckeyes are still the betting favorite to win the national championship. So big picture, maybe that price has changed. I'm still investing. I would be investing. I still think Ohio State is going to win the national championship. And if they had a rematch against Indiana, which is second, they're the top seed and they're second in the betting list. I don't think Ohio State could play worse than they did on Saturday night. And if they had a rematch with the Hoosiers, I would absolutely be picking them to win again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I don't think anybody in the country wouldn't. Again, I'm not the Vegas guy. I'm not a sharp. I don't know anything about what the people in
Are you Nevada, a capper?
I'm not a capper either, but I do know that Ohio State is still the betting favorite to win the national championship, which would indicate that a lot of people in Las Vegas didn't believe what their eyes showed them on Saturday night. You know, there's that Parker Fleming account on Twitter that does the how bad did you get beat thing. And Ohio State and Indiana were basically a dead heat in his analytics. There wasn't a situation where Ohio State was beaten up by Indiana statistically or from a game flow standpoint. The Buckeyes just didn't finish their drives. And I think a lot of people, even though that's been a problem throughout the season, just believe that given an opportunity to fix it, the Buckeyes will, because that's what they've shown they've had the capability to do. They have a Heisman finalist in Julian Sain at quarterback. And they have the two best receivers in the country. So I think a lot of people are of the mindset that last week was an aberration. There's a lot of distractions. You hear Brian Hartline in his press tour down in South Florida over the last 24 hours talking about the distractions and how difficult last week was. Amplify that two or three times for Ryan Day and what he had to go through with the Chris Henry stuff, with Matt Patricia stuff, with everything else. And you can understand why a lot of people just don't buy it.
Yeah. They're selling it, in fact. We're going to get back to some of that red zone conversation, of course, because that is one of the most important stocks that exists for Ohio State right now. But we actually got a number of questions at the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com about the defense. And by the way, we will do a mailbag again on Friday just to get into all of your other questions about Ohio State. So you can send those in to get into that Friday edition, Freaky Friday edition of The Beat presented by the Waterworks, by sending in those questions and comments to the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com. But there were people that were like not real thrilled with the defensive performance, Berm, and that, you know, Jermaine Matthews and Lorenzo Styles got beat for some throws and the touchdown happened on Jermaine Matthews in the corner of the end zone. And they said, maybe this defense wasn't quite as good as it's cracked up to be. They gave up 13 points. So the question is, do you buy or sell that there is actually reason for defensive concern?
I mean, I buy it a little bit. If you play a team that has four or five good wide receivers and a Heisman level quarterback, I buy it. Sure. That just doesn't really exist anywhere else. And so I think it may be as crazy as it is to say, I feel like it may be a problem that's unique to Indiana, which I can't believe I'm saying that. But if you look around the playoff and you ask yourself, like, which of these teams are going to be able to really press Ohio State on the outside and still have a guy. Think about Indiana's receivers, Elijah Surratt, the other guy that didn't have a catch in the game on Saturday. I feel like Cooper is his name, right? Like Ohio State, I thought did a pretty good job. It was three plays down the field, and when Indiana got aggressive, when Ohio State expected them not to be, they were three perfectly thrown balls by Fernando Mendoza. They were three perfectly thrown balls aided by a defensive line that was being mugged and not being, given grace by the officials and paying attention to, even though it was happening right in front of them, that Kenyatta Jackson's being tackled to the ground by multiple people. I just felt like it was a perfect storm. And I do think that, we've seen even over the last month, teams start to take some shots down the field against Ohio State as the pass interference offense has taken shape for schools. But I think it's a good wake-up call for Jermaine Matthews and Davis Nigbinosun. Like, hey, this year's been pretty easy for 12 straight games. But now you're getting into the part of the schedule where you're going to play teams that have talent on the outside and really good quarterbacks, because if you're in the playoff, you probably have a pretty good quarterback. So Ohio State needs to be prepared for it. I think that we will see it get fixed. I have the highest confidence in Matt Patricia's ability to get that taken care of. I think rotationally, that was some concern on Saturday, but Indiana clearly identified the two guys they were going to target. It was Lorenzo Styles and it was Devin Sanchez when he went on the field. And then later in the game, it was the Charlie Becker against Jermaine Matthews matchup that seemed to give some fits. But I don't think it's a overarching problem. But to suggest that Ohio State defense is perfect and doesn't have weaknesses, every defense has a weakness. That's it's up to the offense to figure it out. And I think it was just a perfect storm of a Heisman quarterback and four pretty good receivers at Indiana. And I don't know that other teams have that sort of ability to threaten.
Yeah. And look, I mean, Ohio State plays these games in a way that the possessions are limited. So it magnifies when you do give up deep shots down the field. It becomes problematic if you don't get stops on third down. They were not as good as they have been throughout the rest of the season on Saturday against Indiana. But Ohio State should win every single game that it plays when the Silver Bullets give up 13 points. So I think there are the things that you mentioned. The holding situation is like unbelievable. I'm running out of ways to describe it, and that impacts every other. Like, those throws on Lorenzo Styles or Jermaine Matthews wouldn't exist if Kenyatta Jackson or Caden Curry were not allowed to be held. So that was assault, brother, and that can't happen in the playoff. And I don't know that the officiating is going to get better or worse. Ryan Day has tried to deflect some of that by saying that you can't leave it up to one play, but it wasn't just one play. It wasn't just one hold that was missed. So, I'm not going to use that as the entire justification to sell the notion that Ohio State, should or fans should be concerned about the defense heading into the stretch, but they are going to play nothing but better quarterbacks. You're going to open with either Marcel Reed or Carson Beck. Now, Carson Beck is an interception machine. Marcel Reed fits into this bucket where we've talked about Ohio State being prepared for dual threat quarterbacks. After that, I think we can assume that it is going to be Gunnar Stockton. And if you're trying to get back there and play Indiana, you might face Fernando Mendoza and those wide receivers again. And Ohio State will have to execute at a level that was better on Saturday night. Or maybe it doesn't, because if they hold Indiana to 13 points again, Ohio State should win that game by two scores. So I think that there are definitely plays that Ohio State would want back. When you zoom out, is it something that is going to cost them in the college football playoff? I would say resoundingly no.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I have questions about the defense. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I don't have some curiosities, because I wonder why we didn't see Arvell Reese unleashed more in traditional pass rush roles. I mean, it seems clear that that's going to be his MO when he gets off to the NFL. And I know that maybe because it was Mendoza, you didn't want to take another guy out of coverage because he is so good at reading defenses and making decisions quickly. It seems like you're taking away one of your most valuable weapons if you're asking Arvell Reese to spend most of his time playing in an off-ball linebacker role, because I don't know that's where he's really set up to succeed in the long term. So, I have questions about things. I certainly have questions about rotation and other stuff like that. But I didn't think from a schematic standpoint, or like a whole, this has been exposed standpoint, I don't buy that at all. I do have questions about, when do you really cut loose a guy like Arvell Reese, who for the last I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks seems like they have intentionally muted him. And I wouldn't have anticipated that happening in the Big Ten championship game, but it seemed like it did.
Well, you know, it wouldn't have made any difference if he was allowed to be held on the way of the quarterback. So
true. He's a rock star.
Keep him out there and let him do something where he's not being held. We can narrow in. We have, 3 weeks to go before the Cotton Bowl. And I think we'll be talking plenty more about the defense, but I think we're probably selling both overall on that notion, even though there are things that the Buckeyes would want to do better. I don't know the answer to this one, Berm. So buy or sell that Ohio State will make a change with at kicker with Jaden Fielding going to the Cotton Bowl.
I mean, you have to sell it because it's not the right time to do it. I mean, now that said, do you enter the next 2 weeks of practice where you don't have a clue who your competition is going to be and sort of have an open practice? I think you might. That said, again, there's been 7 months of Jackson Coorville opportunity to pass Jaden Fielding, and he hasn't done it. So we can only assume what that means happens in practice. But clearly, Ohio State is not getting enough out of its kicker when any time. Let me ask you this question. And I know that I heard you talk about it after the game with Zach Bourne, and we were driving back to the hotel. You had said that the minute that you saw Ohio State settled on the 27-yard field goal, that you said, okay, Indiana just won the Big Ten championship. I was standing on the field and thought to myself, there's no way he's making this kick, even though it's a 27-yard kick. And I don't know if that was just inherent negativity, flashbacks to the game against Michigan a year ago. It did not seem to me like anybody on the field expected him to make that kick, including the kicker himself. And that is a problem. Ryan Day talks all the time about not letting games come down to one play. But unfortunately, sometimes in football, when you're playing a good team, it does come down to one play. Or last year against Michigan, two plays. And so when you send out a kicker that you don't believe is going to make the kick, it makes me question why you're sending out the kicker, number one. But number two, why haven't you replaced him? Why even now in this signing class that just finished for Ohio State with really good kickers around the Midwest and the high school ranks, why don't you bring one in? You know, obviously, a lot of people, I think, prescribe to the idea that the kicker is one spot you can just always upgrade in the transfer portal because those guys have kicked in college and you have experience and blah, 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 blah. But here we are with the same kicker who has struggled to make any important field goals in the entire 3 years that he's been kicking for Ohio State.
Yeah. Spencer Holbrook of Letterman Row can also vouch for that. I basically just finished my story as soon as Ryan Day sent Jaden Fielding out there. And even if he made it, I think you were still probably looking at a situation where if you're going to overtime, someone was going to have to make a kick or in those first couple sessions. I know that the rules have changed, but even still, that would parlay into something else that we're talking about with Ohio State's offensive red zone woes. So I thought that the strategy itself was wrong, and I don't know how you address this right now with the personnel, because Ohio State did exactly what you're talking about. They went into the transfer portal. They got an experienced college kicker in Jackson Coorville. And so my question is now more like, we haven't really dove into what the week to week or what the training camp competition was like between those two, because it just, every time it sort of came up, it was, well, Jaden Fielding is the guy, he's experienced. We monitor this all the time. There hasn't been any reason to change, but you know, the game results itself are pretty much undeniable at this point. So as you said, you don't think it's the right time. You know,
I don't know if it's the right time. I just think all available evidence points to Ohio State not feeling like they are in a position to make a change, because it's odd. As much practice as we saw in the spring, the three practices we got to watch at the start of training camp in August, we don't get to watch the kickers. We don't know what they're doing. So you are at the mercy of Gunnar Daniel and Rob Keyes and Nate Ebner and all of the guys in charge of the special teams to say, okay, well, this is the guy they believe in. This is the guy that they feel is the most consistent. And to this point in his career, and I don't mean to be mean, I know this is how it's going to sound, the only consistency that Ohio State's really found with Jaden Fielding is that he consistently misses big kicks. So that's it.
Yeah, and I think that, so I was down there on the field during pregame, and I was actually I was talking to Jaden Fielding because I was watching him warm up, and he was kicking on the very back end line of the end zone at the goalposts. And the first couple were like within a yard or two. And I was like, well, are you working on what, kickoffs? Like, do you want to hit the uprights? Are you, is this about accuracy or not? And he's like, no, I'm trying to hit them. And then like one or two later, he drilled like smack dab on the nearest upright to him. Like, that's a crazy thing to be able to do. He has the talent, and it's a long-winded buildup of saying like his practice performance is probably really remarkably consistent. It must be, or Ohio State would have already tried Jackson Corville at some point this year and put him in a spot to see what he could do in game situations. I'm wondering at what point, like, do you need a gamer kicker? You know, I know that that's a ludicrous conversation for us to be having, but when it comes to the actual talent to execute, Jaden Fielding can kick a ball 30 yards into a 1 foot spot. He's good enough to do that. But when the pressure is at its highest, we have seen him miss multiple chip shots. Like, and that was Ryan Day's word for it on Saturday. I don't know any other word for a 27-yard field goal. The ones that he missed at the end of the game, at the end of November 2024, almost defy belief.
35
but we yards. But we have that's the body of evidence that we have. And I know that kicking is the ultimate small sample size, but those
especially
are the
at Ohio State.
But it's the most important sample size. Like, you can't miss them. You just cannot.
Well, that's the reality is Ohio State doesn't want to kick field goals, and they don't do it very often. It's not like Jaden Fielding has 30 attempts a year and he's, you know, 25 or 30. And just like, this is, you're getting 17 kicks a year. And you're asking for money to do it, and you're getting money to do it. And so if you can't take, if the team that you're being paid by and the people that you're asking for money can't count on you to make those 17-yard kicks, a 27-yard field goal is shorter than an NFL extra point. It's not something a kicker should ever miss. Unless it's blocked, a kicker should never miss a 27-yard field goal if you're playing at a place like Ohio State. And if the Buckeyes, who rarely are required to kick field goals, need you to do it, you better make it. And it's unfair to have the conversation. You certainly don't want, and I know that people will just blame Jaden Fielding, because ultimately, if he makes the 2 field goals against Michigan, the Buckeyes win. If he makes the field goal on Saturday, the overtime is a potential. It's not even like overtime was guaranteed. All Indiana would have to do is make a field goal, and they were moving the ball most of the day. So, like, you can't put all of the pressure on Jaden Fielding or all of the results on Jaden Fielding, but you certainly can identify and understand that he is struggling when it comes to making these pressure kicks matter. And Ohio State needs them. They don't want to kick the field goal very often. I guarantee you, Ryan Day was not like, yes, we got a field goal opportunity here. It's like, ah, crap, we have no choice.
They did have a choice. They had 4th and 1 at the 9. And obviously what had happened to them on the drive before, when the quarterback sneak failed, played into this decision and Ryan Day wanting to take the points. But so let's zoom out. Are you going to buy or sell that Ohio State can fix the red zone deficiency? And it's not limited to Saturday night against Indiana. I want to make that clear. I think that we've had this conversation throughout the season, and it has at times felt like nitpicking because they were still winning so many games comfortably. Ohio State's own standard for success, as we reiterated, is 75% in the red zone. Drives result in touchdowns. Right now, they are at 67%. They have had 22 drives this season that have not ended in a touchdown. They are, even if we're going to include now field goals with the miss and those 2 empty possessions at the end of the second half against Indiana, they are ranked number 44 in the country in red zone scoring, which accounts for both touchdowns and field goals. That is not a neighborhood where Ohio State should be living, and it is not a formula for winning the national championship. So, do you believe, are you going to buy a fix is on the way for the Cotton Bowl berm?
Yes, I am. And maybe I'm a fool for that, but I don't know. And you can give me your insight here. I don't know if Ryan Day has really allowed himself to think about how big of a problem it's been. And I think you get into the playoff, you're going to realize how silly it is to keep taking your best players off the field, how silly it is to have spent months working on a Lincoln Kienholz package where he's in the game and not using it in key moments. And I think those things will be fixed. I don't see Ohio State with three games left to win a national championship, three games where you have to be perfect, three games where you have to be explosive, where you have to put your foot on the gas pedal, three games where you have to be the best version of yourself. I don't see a scenario where Ryan Day is going to allow himself to remove Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith from the field in those situations anymore. And maybe I'm just being optimistic. Maybe I'm being Homer Berm, whatever you want to call me. I think it's going to be fixed because it's 3 weeks to review it and go, holy moly, this really has been an incredible waste of time all year long when you're doing the 13 and 14 personnel inside of the 10-yard line.
Yeah, especially because
if you want to do it at the 1 yard line, fine. At the nine, silly.
What about your own 28-yard line? That's not the red zone, but I was just shocked to see that personnel package out there at that time of the game. The shocking part is that Ohio State has the most talented offensive personnel in the country, so it can do whatever it wants. So I wouldn't pretend, and I never do, to be an X's and O's guru. I have asked very recently about some of the justification, what the goal is, what they're hoping to achieve with the 13 and 14 personnel packages in the red zone. I don't even like the answer makes sense, but I don't think that it matters because what they're trading by taking Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate both off the field or by not allowing the actual passing attack to execute the way just the week before you had Brandon Ennis and Max Clair putting Michigan in a blender in the red zone and in a third and five situation with the exact same route. You are getting winnable matchups by running your base offense. If you want to be creative and use the quarterback run game, we just saw that throughout November. I have said, I'm not changing my stance on this. I don't love two quarterback systems, but if Ohio State is looking for a solution and struggling the last two games with a quarterback sneak, then Lincoln Kienholz is basically designed to offer that for you as a power rushing threat or to move the pile and get 1 yard in those situations. You have been saying for months, don't need to take Bo Jackson off the field. Like all these things are available. So that's reasons why I would buy it. I don't understand why it has taken so long for that realization to occur. We can also see the Bison. We could also see Caden McDonald, which we did see against Michigan. And I thought that was an actual touchdown. Yeah. So that wasn't reviewed in a way that made any sense. But like Ohio State can do anything. Why would it dig its heels in on putting four tight ends on the field or using a true freshman as a fullback? It has not worked all year. It didn't cost them any victories until it did. Yeah. And you cannot have two empty possessions in a talent-equated hardware game. And if that happens again, then they won't win the national championship.
Yeah. And ostensibly, I mean, the rationale, I think, from Ryan Day and the offensive brain trust perspective is, hey, if you get Jeremiah Smith out there on an island, one-on-one, then you're going to have a better chance to win. And if he is covered, well, then you have all these other options and misdirections and all this stuff. But that doesn't work if the four tight ends that are out there are not blocking up the play well enough to let Julian Sain have time to throw or to get comfortable in the pocket. And so what ends up happening is you got all this movement and all these guys running into each other, and it's not producing extra time for Julian Sain to throw the football. It's not producing extra receivers that are open. I mean, now we can probably nitpick Julian's decision on the third and one in the final drive because it looked like Bo Jackson was open in the flat there. Maybe a quick pass out would have picked up 2 yards in the first down. But again, when he's forced to roll out and he's scrambling for his life, then you're like, okay, well, and the only other option on the pass route is Bennett Christian. I guess I'm like, why do you have Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate if you're not having them out, especially because the only time the red zone worked on Saturday, even though Ohio State tried to shoot itself in the foot on that possession as well by having a false start from the 4 yard line, is because Carnell Tate was able to create himself space when Julian Sain was scrambling and forced to roll out and found Carnell in the back of the end zone standing there waiting because he's good enough to get open. Jeremiah is good enough to get open if he has a full field to work, but if he's just running a little sideline route, and it's you have a 3-foot window to throw that football in. That just doesn't make sense to me. And I'm not an expert. I'm not a football X's and O's guy. I understand that. Ryan Day, Brian Hartline, Keenan Bailey, all these guys are. But just from the 10,000-foot view, you're like, man, you could also have Brandon Innes and Max Clair and Carnell Tate out there and still have Bo Jackson in the backfield. You can spread the entire field. You're allowed to use from white line to white line. And if you put Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes and Max Clair, and then you have Bo Jackson as the one guy behind the running back, I just feel like that's going to be a better way to win in space, because the defense then has to cover the full 53 yards.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We'll see if that brings about a change. Seasons also change. Comfort doesn't. Call the Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing for maintenance, installation, and repairs, or visit online at thewaterworks.com. The Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing are proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics. Will there be a change at right guard, Berm? Are you buying or selling that?
No,
he says.
Okay. It's similar to the kicker conversation. I guess Saturday night maybe felt different in some ways, but we've seen Tegra Shibola respond in the past when he's been challenged like this. I don't know what causes the inconsistency. I don't know what causes the up and down, back and forth performances by Tegra. I know on Saturday night, it was not a rotation situation. He did not get rotated in and out. He got benched. And Gabe Van Sickle played really, really well in his stead. Gabe Van Sickle, the offense, moved a lot better when he was out there. Maybe. How about maybe? Can I settle on maybe? Because I Ryan Day is not shied away from the conversation. He said it a few weeks ago. You guys saw what I saw. And then we saw what we saw against Michigan. You're like, hey, if Tegra is at his best, the offensive line is way better when Tegra's out there. But when he's not at his best, it is hard to feel like you're doing yourself a service. You're putting Julian Sain and the offense in harm's way time after time after time. And it's just not effort. It's a bad effort by Tegra in those moments. And I just don't know what causes it. But I don't think there's going to be a lack of discussion. Let me just say that. I mean, this is what you've been waiting for the last 2 months. If you're Ohio State, you have these extra weeks to figure it out.
Well, if you're going to have training camp style practices, if you are trying to have some level of physicality to stay sharp in the buildup while Texas A&M and Miami are playing in the first round, I mean, how much competition is that lend itself to? I really don't know how Ohio State will handle that. I have to buy the idea that it's on the table, because Ohio State was willing. Now, some of this was forced. Some of it was necessity with injury in the playoff push a year ago, but it was willing to play multiple guys to find a solution and not let some of the, or mitigate some of the risk of the inconsistency actually costing them, whether that was at left guard or right guard, as they managed their way through the postseason to great success and to a championship a year ago. Integra was part of that. He is capable. He has the physical tools. He has the experience. He just does not seem to have the ability to sustain that for every single snap of a game and every single week. And that's maddening. And I think as you're looking at this, if you're Ryan Day and Tyler Bowen and trying to find out that solution, you're like, you're looking at this like, well, we can get him to do this 5 more times, 10 more times. He's shown capable. But Texas A&M or Miami both have the athletes up front, and we'll have seen how Indiana attacked him, which is don't just put a big beefy defensive tackle on him and just go straight at him. Like, if you give him movement, if you give him different looks, if you change where his vision is going, like, Tegra is not the strength of his game, but he's going to have to be involved in this postseason. I think that the injury and recovery process for Josh Padilla has changed the trajectory for what Ohio State intended to do. And Gabe Van Sickle, as you mentioned, has made the most, I think, of the opportunities he's had over the last 3 games, 4 games. But I don't know that he is going to be at the level that Ohio State would say, you are ready to start in the Cotton Bowl. And they may have been willing to do that with Josh Padilla based on the rise that he was on before the sidetrack. And I don't know. He's been available. He's been listed as available the last couple of weeks. But if the reps that he missed, if the time that he missed, if the nature of the injury have kept him from He's not played since he was cleared. If there was an intention to move away from Tegra or at least make that more of a 50-50, that seemed the direction that they were going at the start of November, and that plan had to be scrapped. If this three-week stretch puts Josh Padilla back in a place that that could be an option, that would be where I'm more curious about. Because I would sell the idea that Gabe Insickle is immediately going to replace Tegra Tshabola against A&M or Miami.
Yeah, I mean, if you recall a few weeks back, I had mentioned that someone at the Woody had shared that they felt like Tegra's best was when he was playing 30 to 35 snaps a game. I don't think that he gave a good 30 or 35 snaps on Saturday, which is what I'm sure he got, considering Gabe Ansickle was in the game for the last two long drives. And those are 15 minutes of game possession.
I think the snap count wound up being like almost identical given the lengths of those drives. I think it was like 28 and 27.
And there's nothing about playing offensive line that's easy. And I realize that, you know, it sounds at times like we're just picking on Tegra Tshabola. But it's about the fact that his mistakes are clearly costing Ohio State week in and week out when he makes them. And you know, we saw Philip Daniels struggle at Wisconsin. And, you know, he told you last week about the playing on one leg, and he's healthy. We haven't heard that that's a problem for Tegra Tshabola. So, whatever the issue is, whatever's causing the inconsistency, it's a similar conversation to Jaden Fielding, which is, this is not a 1 year issue. This is not a last Saturday issue. This has been going on all season long. It went on all of last season, except for the playoff run. And it went on in 2023 as well, because he was a first time starter and learning the position. You just can't run your offense the way you need to and want to if 25 to 30% of the time, one offensive lineman is a sieve and letting people blow right by him. And again, we've seen Austin Sarrivald make mistakes. We've seen Luke Montgomery make mistakes, or Carson Hintzman and Philip Daniels.
They're going to happen.
It happens. It's the backside of those mistakes that, as an observer, when I see a defensive lineman get past Tegra Tshabola and then he stands there and doesn't try to do anything else, that is where I'm like, ugh, that's frustrating. But again, Ohio State sees these kids every day in practice, and the coaches get paid a lot of money to make these sort of decisions. The coaches are not intentionally putting someone out there that they think is worse than the other guy. So that's, but whatever is happening on game day, whatever's happening to start the spiral for Tegra Tshabola in these games, like once that spiral starts and you see the first time he missed, like, I think Ohio State needs to be quicker on the hook more than anything else. I don't think I think they believe, and I believe, that if Tegra is at his best, he's the better fit for the offensive line. But if that spiral starts, then that spiral has to be stopped, and you have to stop it by taking him out of the game ASAP.
Yeah, I think they were too slow to adjust against Indiana. Like, that's it. And that's why I think, like, Tegra will probably start again in the Cotton Bowl, but it is a matter of the shorter leash. We said that about when this Josh Padilla discussion came to the forefront roughly a month ago. That was the thing. It's like, I don't know that they feel confident based on the level of experience that you put Josh Padilla out there to start the game. You wait and see if you're getting good Tegra or inconsistent Tegra. And I think that they waited too long. On Saturday, I was half right with the snaps. Gabe Ansickle, because of the last desperation drive, actually finished with one more snap than Tegra. It was 29 for Gabe Ansickle and 28 to Tegra Tshabola. Like, I don't think anyone needed 28 snaps to know that there was a problem going on there. So
no, Tegra going back out there to start the second half after playing the first half he played did not make sense. And when you think about that first drive, which Ohio State lost 30 yards in sack yardage, you're like, well, especially on the first sack, which was directly because of Tegra, when you had Jeremiah running the same route you had against Oregon last year in the Rose Bowl, that play got blown up because of Tegra. The next play got blown up because of Tegra. And yeah, Julian shouldn't have lost 20 yards on that play because that was horrible officiating. But it's a problem, and I don't know how you fix it at this point. I do wonder, and we'll wrap up this edition of The Beat presented by The Waterworks with this question. As it becomes more or less likely that Carson Hintzman goes off to the NFL, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is still a possibility. Obviously, we've heard a couple weeks ago that he's probably leaning towards returning, but you never know what happens. if Gabe Van Sickle continues the rise, doesn't it make more sense to make sure Josh Padilla is getting the reps at center at this
point? In the playoff?
As in practice, learning how to play center, because he may have to be the center next year, or does it not matter? Or do you think that Gabe Van Sickle has jumped Padilla solely because of injury? Because my personal belief is that Gabe Van Sickle as a potential starter at right guard next year makes more sense to Josh Padilla because of his size, because of what his athleticism allows him to do. Josh is more designed to be a center, I think.
I definitely agree that he is better suited to playing center. And maybe Ohio State is now in a position where Gabe Van Sickle was on level footing with Josh Padilla. Because of the injury, because of the reps that he got, the way that he has made the most of that stretch. Like I think you're right that even in the short term that you would need a contingency plan if Carson Hensman were to, you know, have his shoelace come untied or his helmet come off and needed to go to the sideline for a play. Like, I think you would rather have Josh Padilla prepared for that moment, because there have been other solutions that Ohio State could try at guard. And that may not be as immediately apparent at center, where, you know, we've seen Jake Cook, I think, trying to get some of those emergency reps or working in practice. Like, that's probably not the spot that Ohio State wants to find itself in.
Yeah, and I just think, I mean, Padilla has been cleared to play for 3 weeks now, and he hasn't. So it's not like his leg was chopped off or amputated, and they've been waiting for the new one to grow in like he's some sort of salamander. It's like he's able to play, and they're not playing him. They're playing Gabe Van Sickle. So to me, it's just an indicator that, well, maybe Gabe has proven that he's actually a better fit for what this line needs, especially in the run block game, which has, you know, been better in the last couple of weeks. I don't know. There's just all these moving parts, and you look at these 15 extra practices you get in the playoff era because of the bowl game, and you wonder why Notre Dame would not want those for their players, but whatever.
What an idiotic decision to just cry and take your ball and go home. And what benefit does that do for their program? What a ludicrous decision for Notre Dame. I'm selling that from Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame's athletic department. Like, poor foresight. But I am still buying Ohio State and this chances of going back to back and winning a national championship. That is the main takeaway here on a Wednesday edition of The Beat presented by the Waterworks. Yes, Berm.
I just want to tell everyone, we may have a special guest for the Thursday edition of The Beat. We're working on that. Hopefully that comes through. If it doesn't, then we'll be back with Three Thoughts Thursday. But Friday will be a mailbag, right? So
that's correct.
As you can see on the scroll on the screen, if you want your question answered, email us at theaustinandbermshow@gmail.com. Or if you're just listening, you can still email us at theaustinandbermshow@gmail.com, because if the email works for people who are watching or listening, it's crazy how email works.
Technology, what a gift it has been to all of humanity. I can't think of a single bad thing that has occurred because of it. Thanks for joining us on a Wednesday edition of The Beat presented by the Waterworks. He's Berm. I am Austin. We will talk to you on Thursday.
Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then in another clash of undefeated teams, Earl Clark and Coach Steven Jackson lead the DMV Trilogy against Montrezl Harrell, Coach Dr. J, and the Chicago Triplets. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays Monday on BET. Presented by iHeart. Yay, yay, yay.